Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
It was super enjoyable to have Jeffrey on.
He's amazing. He's amazing.
And he left us pun-free. That is the first time in my entire experience of knowing Jeffrey for a couple of decades.
Tony, I think it's interesting what he was saying about the farming techniques, the vineyard work, and how it's changed.
Well, we always talk about the wine business being the real estate business. The real estate in Bordeaux has gotten more and more valuable, and that is one of the global commodity, the sale of Bordeaux. Those are big vineyards and big sites, and the wines age incredibly well, and they ship well. So if you make a product that's going to be a reliable product, that's going to be a strong product, I mean, this is speaking about it pretty coldly, you give a lot of value to that real estate, mm-hmm. especially if it gains notoriety.
Sure.
You're going to invest in what makes that real estate work out, because once the reputation is made, it's made. That's that 1855 classification shows that. There are wines that were a lousy quality for a long time that traded on their classification, say in the village of Margaux, principally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, when we were there, I think it was 2 years ago that we were on that trip, and they had just changed one of their techniques to actually going through the vineyards with a horse and, a wagon, basically, because they had found, I guess those were those clay vineyards where they had tamped down the soil so hard that, it just wasn't aerated the way it needed to be, or working the way it needed to be, I guess.
It's funny. At the same time, people have gotten smarter about their technical abilities in the cellar and smarter about some technical things in the vineyard. But mostly the choices that they make in the vineyard, whether it's using, a horse to draw a plow to aerate soil, mm-hmm. Not putting tractors through the vineyards at all.
Mm-hmm. Because of the weight,
Because of the weight, also because of any potential, a residue from running, say, diesel or something in the vineyard. You really don't want a lot of diesel in your Sainte Estève.
Definitely not.
Sainte Estève that you spend a couple hundred dollars for.
Right.
So.
Well, and here we are talking about soil. Maybe we should talk about, soil types, grape varietals, in the region.
Some of sort of the basics.
Mm-hmm.
The thing to know about Bordeaux is that it's all surrounded, it all kind of surrounds this estuary of the Gironde. And the one bank where the Médoc is, that there's a series of villages there that go north to south down towards the city of Bordeaux. And then from the city of Bordeaux headed east, there's a series of small villages again. And that's and when you look on a map, that which is east of Bordeaux, those are principally low-growing areas. Near the city of Bordeaux, the villages that you find are a blend for the most part of Bordeaux and Cabernet Sauvignon. North of there, north of actually the town Salsens, and beginning with Margaux, are the very famous villages for Cabernet Sauvignon-based wines. And they all still have some Merlot. In fact, Merlot is the widest planted grape in Bordeaux. North of where Pontécané is the village Sainte Estève, which has a lot of clay in the soil. And that's usually about 60-40 Cabernet Sauvignon Merlot. And there are a number of famous growths up there. No first growths, though, in that classification, of the Médoc, which is what we're talking about. The next village down is Pouillac, famous for really big masculine wines, lots and lots of Cabernet Sauvignon.
That's where I went to the fair, Pouillac, just as a side note. Thank you for saying the town, Tony.
That's the town. Pouillac's the town most famous for its lamb in Bordeaux.
Oh, good. Okay.
And Pontécané was sort of the epicenter of the mouton farming. But that's gravelly soil.
Okay.
As you head south, the gravel gets smaller. Saint-Julien is the next one south. It's still a lot of Cabernet Sauvignon, maybe 80% or so. Pouillac usually about 85%. And over time, these percentages have adjusted a little bit because guys kind of cheat the borders on their farms a little bit. And Merlot tends to do better when its feet are wet as opposed to Cabernet Sauvignon. So if they're headed towards the river a little bit, and Bordeaux is not some hilly wine-growing region. Bordeaux is pretty darn flat. There's a little slope. I mean, it's barely a sledding slope. Okay. To give you an idea.
And that's important to understand.
Yeah.
Along with all this different soil. I mean, I read something that said that, the soil changes with every step you take, basically.
That may be slightly overdramatic, but the most in generally kind of statements, they're really pretty true. the different breaks between the villages have to do, you know, or really have to do with old
glaciers going through and.
No, not glaciers going through. Like literally man-made, little man-made estuaries from the Dutch that that broke up some of the areas, and they break them up where there were breaks in the soil types.
Okay.
And so there literally is, I mean, based on, you know, like pragmatic reasons from 400 years ago, and yes, there were a bunch of Dutchmen on that coast for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
There were breaks between these soil types, and you can see them. It's just like it's a little bit like you make a great big bed with a duvet, and it just kind of falls off on the edges.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one starts.
Okay.
If you look at the little hills, south of Saint Julien, then you run into to Margaux, and then the soil changes a good bit. That's a lot of sand. The gravel goes away. Sand gives very different quality to the tannins of Cabernet Sauvignon that grows in it.
How so?
Which is just much prettier tannins. The roots go deep very quickly. You tend to get more floral wines. The Pauillacs that have almost the exact same blend, whether 85 or 90% Cabernet Sauvignon, you get much beefier wines, much more brawny, sort of walnutty kind of power to the Cabernet. It's an interesting difference because the weather gradations up and down that up and down the Medoc are minimal. There's really very little difference. Once you get to the city of Bordeaux and the vineyards near there, in Pessac-Léognan or Graves or Entre-deux-Mers, which is a mostly white wine region, and there's some Bordeaux Superior sites. It's a lot of Merlot that's grown, 50-50 Cab Merlot for the most part, and the best sites in Pessac. And then when you head east, the soils change significantly. You heard Jeffrey referencing in Saint-Emilion the three different soil types within the appellation. It's kind of a sprawling appellation, and there's a big central hill. And there's a sandy slope to that hill, and there's also clay coming down the hill on one side, you know. And there's very gravelly soil in one section with the clay subsoil.
It's kind of amazing to me that you know all these things. That's amazing, because that's a lot to. I mean, that's just a little bit of.
Well, you can taste it.
Wine, the knowledge to learn.
You can taste it in the.
You can. Most normal people can't.
You can taste it. You can taste the changes from year to year based on the soil types.
That's fascinating, though.
Knowing how the stuff actually grows.
And I think every farmer that's if there are any farmers listening to this show, they have to appreciate what you're saying, because it's just. I don't think people often think about how much the soil affects the taste of our food. Whether it's wine or whatever we're eating.
No.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Every year we buy tomatoes and they're very different from every single farmer.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of an amazing thing.
Right.
As you head east, the weather changes slightly. No question. You're further away from the coast. It's less moderated. You get a little more extreme. And Merlot ripens faster than Cabernet Sauvignon. So when you're in a site like Saint-Emilion or right next to it, Côte Castillon, or just north from there, Pomerol, which is a tiny site, a small village with a limited number of growers. Saint-Emilion has a lot of small growers. Pomerol has a limited number of growers, and the soil has a lot of iron in it. It makes for a very particular mineral stamp. I have an unreasonable affection for wines from Pomerol. It, to me, is almost a place where there's a Burgundian sort of mineral quality and a breadth, because the Merlot is at its maybe it's most generous there of anywhere. I think for some reason it ripens a little bit slower in certain sections of Pomerol as well, and it expresses itself in a particular way. And I have, like I said, an unreasonable affection for wines from
that's good to know.
From Pomerol. If anyone listening wants to give me Christmas gifts or anything like that.
Oh, wow. Well, and also,
it's me soliciting, yes.
Also, one of the things that people always talk about, the left bank and the right bank, and you just went through the whole region.
It's not as simple as that. I mean, I think you really have to look at the entire
map. Especially when you talk north, south, and east and west, you know, it's
not just one side of the river or the other.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
but it is something to understand because
people reference it.
Yeah,
no
people
question.
Do reference it. And actually, when we were on our trip, it confused me a little bit because, yeah, it didn't seem to make a lot of sense.
It's much
what
more
was the left bank.
It's
and
much
the right
more
bank.
Like a boomerang than it is two sides of the river.
There you go. Thank you for that.
Okay. It's all much right. more like the Medoc is that left side of the boomerang that's sort of vertical-ish, and then the one that's much more horizontal, you know, that points east.
Got it.
Side of the boomerang is is where you find all the wines from Libourne, the Pomerol, Saint-Emilion, Côte Castillon, all that sort of business.
What are some of the best vintage years to look for?
It depends. Yeah, Jeffrey and I referenced a couple of different things. Mm-hmm. In the 2000s, most and generally for red wines, 2000, 2005, 2009, 2010. That being said, there are some terrific 2001s, and they're more fairly priced.
Okay.
2002 looked weak, but there's a handful of excellent wines from 2002.
Mm-hmm.
2003 was the year of the great heat in France, and because of that, the wines are unusual, and there's certain growers. That was a tricky year for growers, and the 2003s that are excellent, I think most of them are at the very peak, but a few that are really special where they kind of nailed it exactly right, I think those wines will be great from that first barrel sample for 30 or 40 years, like Côtes de Nesle.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just nailed it in 2003.
Great. It's good to...
And there's some that are delicious, but, I mean, I recently opened a 2003 Chateau Aubryon, which was not completely remarkable.
Hmm.
You know, a first growth that was, that because of its terroir, was, I'm like, well, I know it's not going to get better than it is. And it was very tasty, but it was not as remarkable as a number of the guys that just nailed it.
What year did you say it was really hot?
2003.
What did it do to the Rhone and Burgundy? I'm curious.
In Burgundy, they made excellent wines. It seemed like wines from the Rhone Valley.
Right. Okay, got it.
You know, that's... I mean, Gervais Chambertin with the body and some of the flavors of Chateau Neuf du Pape is very unusual.
Okay.
And in the Rhone, because those grapes are better adapted to the heat, the ones that are good, like there's certain Chateau Neuf du Pape that are superb in 2003, but there are an awful lot that completely washed out and have already died. 2004 was a bit of a weak year in some ways, but the Cabernet Sauvignon-based wines are aging very, very attractively, the Medoc wines.
We should probably talk a little bit about food.
We should.
Okay.
I'm sorry. You're going to get me down the rabbit hole.
And that's fine.
Of wine information. So.
Of course. Why not?
So the region is known for wine.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that usually mean for food?
Well, that it suffers. Not. You know, that's a little dramatic to put it that way. But I mean, the wine.
Everyone's hammered. Everyone is hammered, so they really don't worry about the cooking so much.
Well, and it seems like the food is just.
Is that what you're saying?
There's a lot of parsley, garlic, shallot, butter, or oil. Used in cooking. You know, I'm looking at recipes for baked oysters or baked mussels, and, you know, you might have those three or four things and then throw in some breadcrumbs. One of the things that I saw that I am absolutely going to make immediately, if not sooner, is entrecote with beef marrow sauce.
Mm-hmm.
But beef marrow sauce to me is, you know, especially when you think of Bordeaux, you think of sauce bordelaise. And, okay, so this
I don't want sauce bordelaise for Bordeaux. The tomato product is a funky acidity for...
Right.
For the wines.
And the other thing is that the sauce is bone marrow that's been chopped up and mixed with shallots and parsley and salt and pepper. And you while you're grilling your entrecote, which is a French cut of a steak, so you could do a ribeye or New York strip, whatever.
It's a little bit like a strip or a porterhouse.
Yeah. What you do is as the steak actually begins to get hot, you just rub this on the steak. I love this idea. I think that sounds so good. I've never thought of actually rubbing bone marrow and let it melt onto your steak. I'm doing that.
There's a little restaurant that does entrecote called Lion d'Or.
Yeah.
And you've heard me talk about this place.
Yeah.
It's just south of the village of Margaux. It's right on the route, the main route headed towards Margaux, and the menu is very short, and the people are a little bit testy. And you can bring your own wine that you buy from the chateaus and the shops.
Mm-hmm.
And one of their specialties is entrecote. And the entrecote that they bring, they have pickled shallots that they've chopped and bone marrow melting. There's bone marrow melting on the entrecote. There's pickled shallots and lots of parsley chopped on the steak as well. That, you know, a great big entrecote that they slice
yes,
at your
please.
Table.
Yeah, sounds good.
That with some samples of some young vintage, you know, Margaux or Bouillac or something, mm-hmm. not so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Duck of almost any kind and Bordeaux wines is an easy default,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't have to be a complicated preparation.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's funny that maybe my favorite charcuterie, if not my favorite, right in my top two or three, is a Graton de Porc Médocain, which no one makes in the States, and it's literally a terrine made with everything from the neck of the pig.
Okay.
And it begins by making a jelly from all the head and the protein in the spine.
Awesome, great.
And that's what you actually poach. That stock is what you poach everything in.
Okay.
And then cool it, reseason it, form it.
Sounds good.
It's a ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
That with just walnuts and toasted bread and walnut oil is a spectacular thing.
Say what it's called again. Pork to...
Gratin.
Gratin.
Gratin means to scrape.
Okay.
It's the scrapings of pork
like
meadow
grating. Cane. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like from cleaning that piece of the pig's carcass. And maybe my favorite simple dessert in the world is literally from Saint-Emilion. And you know what it is, a cannelé.
Yeah, that is your favorite dessert. Well, yes.
It really is. Ridiculous little eggy pastries.
Yeah, and it's a fluted, it's a specific mold. They're very cute. They're small, they're tall, they're narrow, and they're fluted on the mold is fluted, and it becomes very caramelized around the outside. But the interior of the dough is very moist and almost holy. It's kind of hard to describe. It's very unusual.
It is a spectacular grown-up version of a pancake.
Is
what it is. It has a little bit of the cognac scent in it,
mm-hmm.
and because that's part of what if you do the eggs the night before and you have the cognac with the eggs,
right.
The night before.
There you go.
That's how you get the real perfume on those.
Right on.
And when it caramelizes on the outside, it you can almost smell a little bit of vanilla from aging in the barrels, and
mm-hmm.
it's a different vanilla from the vanilla you get from the bean. Okay. That and a glass of Sauternes, spectacular.
Oh, sounds good. Just a quick recipe for that. It's 2 ounces of butter, 16 ounces of milk, 2 eggs plus 1 egg yolk, 8 ounces of fine sugar, 4.5 ounces of flour, and vanilla extract, as you say, or vanilla, bourbon vanilla. You would hardly think you would be making something from that.
We spent all the time talking about Bordeaux wine trade and Bordeaux recipes and almost nothing about the white wines that can be beautiful or the sweet wines that are mm-hmm. beautiful and age forever from Sauternes and Bussac. But everyone's first perception is red wine from Bordeaux.
Ooh, so maybe we'll do a show on Sauternes and the white wine of Bordeaux.
Well, thanks for listening to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
We'll see you next time.